I want to talk to you about the attack on the Preclear. The attack on the Preclear. Of course, it really isn't an attack on the Preclear at all. It's an attack on the Preclear's aberrations. Because really, if you attack the Preclear directly, you would find out that you had selected him as the counter effort and selected as your effort his aberrations, and of course would swamp him. Now, however much this has been in practice in old psychotherapy, however much this has been done here and there, it is not advisable in this field to select the aberrations of the Preclear as your allies, because then you line them up so that you and his aberrations attack him and his basic personality, and of course he won't come up the tone scale. What you want to do is take the Preclear as your effort and select out as the counter effort his aberrations. Now, when you walk up to a Preclear and you say you're always saying something or other, well, who said that? Now, you're making yourself big, tough, and strong by making an ally an effort out of his counter-efforts, and you're attacking him. Therefore, you reduce him on the tone scale quite markedly. If you walk up to him and said, no matter how strange this might sound to him, if you walked up to him and said, you know, knowing the family you've got, you must be an awfully tough guy to kick back all these aberrations. He'd come up the tone scale, whether he liked it or not, even though he might say, what a corny remark, or something of the sort. He couldn't help it, because you've selected him as an effort and his aberrations as a counter-effort. Now, one of the mechanisms of society in the control of individuals is criticism is good for you. We are giving you constructive criticism. Now, if you give a person enough constructive criticism, he'll cease to exist. If you give an artist enough constructive criticism, he will utterly cease to art. This practice in the American university is responsible for the fact the American university has proven itself completely incapable of teaching any of the arts in any university, in any part of the country, under any management. I don't want to be particular or selective about this. A poll of the American Fiction Guild in the old days demonstrated that we had one major in English literature in our midst. One who had studied writing in a university. It was a good university, and he studied all the way through, and he got an A straight through the end. This fellow was a literary agent. Now, you see,
it
set him up beautifully. Now, all of our constructive criticism, examining the fellow on this and examining the fellow on that and doing something or other about trying to grade him and make him better and improve his imagination and do this about him and do that about him and do something else, is validating his inabilities and invalidating his abilities to perform in the field of the arts. Now, the field of the arts must be, of all things, the most self-determined of any of man's activities. An artist who is not operating on his concept and his own interpretation, or a group of artists which are not operating on their interpretation of the material universe and the human race and the dynamics in general, will not produce art. This accounts for Hollywood. Now,
when we have,
then, constructive criticism, we only have a vicious method of reducing an individual's self-determinism, his ability, and his reasoning powers to keep him from producing. Grim. But you know you have to accept it because I'm saying it for your own good. And I wouldn't really tell you this, but people really don't like you. And if They of course don't like to admit it. They don't say it to your face or anything like that. But if you just dressed better, I think you'd get along fine. That's a very overt level. And yes, my dear, I think your hat is just stunning. I've thought so for years. That's on a covert level. But that's all on the same line. What passes for conversation amongst the normals today is actually very bitter, destructive, invective, if you want to know the truth. Now, the criticism I've made of the American University and its utter and complete and dismal inability to instruct in the field of the arts is not intended personally for anyone in the universities. And it is said only in sympathy for a student who has been subjected to this line. The American universities 2 years ago graduated 280,000 bachelors of art. No artists. Supposing you graduated into a society 280,000 clear-eyed, well-trained, well-schooled, practiced artists. You would see that society change in its shape, color, and structure in a single generation. Above the maddest dreams of anyone. 280,000 artists. They wouldn't have to graduate another one for a long time. And that alone, as an act, in one single year, would change the entire society. Now, you see? You see what validating the individual as an able being might do instructionally. Well, a preclear is making himself very, very vulnerable indeed when he permits himself to be audited. And he is expecting you to validate him and his self-determinism as much as possible and fight against his aberrations. Your constant hammering and insistence that he is succumbing to his aberrations will cause him to succumb to them, because what you're doing is telling him, now, the reason you can't run these is because you can't run them because they're too strong for you, and you actually are them, and how do you know that these aren't you, and where are you anyway? He would become in very, very bad condition. Actually, the whole art of addressing a preclear is the art of validating and inviting the confidence of himself in himself, in order to produce good, solid results with a preclear. You have to validate his ability to run an incident. You could even cheer a preclear up through an incident where you're suddenly bogging by not giving him sympathy. Not invalidating him, you understand, but don't give him sympathy. Saying, yes, I know it's awfully tough, but let's try to run it anyway. So tell him, well, go ahead. The worst he can do is kill you. Something on that order. You consider it's a sort of a crack he isn't quite expecting out of you. You're not giving him sympathy. Therefore, if you don't give him sympathy, it means you don't pity him. That means he's not down tone scale. That means he can probably run it. Or if you said to him, well, go ahead. Let's get rid of this lock where this truck runs over you and get in some real stuff. And by golly, that truck incident, if you say that, even if he knows you're joking, has a tendency to blow just on that, because he changes his evaluation of the incident. People who stand around somebody that has had an accident occur to them and say, sympathetic things, you poor fellow, I'm so sorry that it happened. Oh, how will I'll do my best to help you get over this. It means, you poor boob, I can't possibly see how you would ever recover from anything like this, you weakling. And somehow or other, I am going to give you enough of a helping hand so you can get your jelly-like limbs and spirit into line. I mean, let's put it in different words and retain the same meaning, and that's what sympathy is. Now, there are three levels of doing something for a preclear. One is to do something for him and get him over his aberration. And the next is to make him comfortable, keep him up along the line, keep his tone from dropping any. And if you can't do that, you can give him sympathy. Because if you can't do steps one and two for him, he must be almost dead. He is so close to the bottom and so close to being on his way out that of course, if you gave him sympathy, it would bring him up to 0.5 or something. Sympathy is a two-edged sword. It is a weapon used by the overtly vicious to kill. And it is used also by individuals upon the almost dead to get them up enough so they'll live. Depends where preclear is, whether you really can give him any sympathy at all or not. But I have never found sympathy to pay off. Preclear came in one time. I remember this guy, this fellow was a wonderful case, an example of the fact that motion goes through an apathy case, goes through apathy. Because if you had picked up his little finger and touched it again, his motion would have just gone through it. You probably could have taken a sword and run him through the middle, and he probably would have quivered. It just would have gone through him. He wouldn't even have looked through you at you reproachfully. I mean, that would have required too much motion. He was really almost gone out the bottom. He came in, he sat down, and he started talking a little bit about how horrible the world had been to him. Well, now,
I didn't tell him that the world
was horrible to him. So that it stuck. I sympathized with him. Oh, I just sympathized with him all over the place. All of a sudden, he realized I couldn't be possibly sympathizing with him to this extent. And he started to get annoyed. And he came clear up to 1.5. And he came up from 1.5, tapered off to about 2.2. And he ran like a well-oiled clock afterwards. The way I did this, simply he'd tell me, my mother was always mean to me, and she beat me every day. And I would say, gosh, every day, did she beat you Sundays too? And he started on it to give you some sympathy again, and then you would say, oh, on Sundays? Then she wasn't a Christian, was she? No, just non-sequitur about this whole thing. And he came up the tone scale, and he showed me he could run in grams. He ran in grams. All right. Your attitude toward the preclear is differentiated by whether or not you're willing or unwilling to do anything for the preclear, and then whether you're going to validate the preclear or validate his aberrations. Now, your willingness or unwillingness to help him will be dependent upon whether or not you have any sneaking idea in the back of your head as to whether or not you're going to use any of his aberrations or not for your own control of him. Just ask yourself that. You very often find out the preclear reminds you of your great aunt Agatha that you would dearly love to have busted the head of. And Aunt Agatha, you were never able to control, but boy, you sure can control this preclear now. Ha ha. You're going to get there. And the next thing you know, you find yourself just butchering this preclear. You say, I wonder why I'm doing that. Butcher, slash, cut. Well, you've only got that half run out. Well, let's go on to this later incident. Knowing full well that later incidents reduce much less easily than earlier incidents. So, it's a very good thing to ask yourself, is there any reason why I don't want this preclear to get well? And you're liable to straight wire out of a very startled you the fact that you don't want this preclear to get well. Why not? Well, perhaps, that you got this feeling like this person needs sympathy. And then you find out that this girl reminds you of the first girl you had in this life, and this girl jilted you, and you felt very sorry for it ever since. But when she did come back and tried to make it up with you, you found out that by being mean to her, that made her feel, you know, and you get this terrific computation just going around in your head about some girl way back someplace or other that has nothing to do with this preclear. So you want to ask yourself that question, and you'll blow out these similarities of earlier persons to the preclear, or difficulties which you are having in present time. Financial, social, familial, any difficulty you're having in present time that might make it desirable for this preclear to stay on his present plane instead of rise. Be fair with yourself. You very often discover that in spite of you being you and being fully, actually determined to do your level best, in this one particular case, there's a little bug there that if you got it out and recognized it, all of a sudden, you'd find the preclear very easy to run. Now, there's this one. You're about to run a preclear through an incident which you haven't had run on you, a standard incident, like facsimile one. And you want to ask yourself, now do I want to run this preclear? You want to recognize, I haven't had facsimile run yet. It's possible. If I run facsimile one on this preclear, I'm liable to get restimulated. These somatics are liable to turn on. Am I willing to take this aboard? If you decide flatly that you are, sure, all right, so it doesn't matter. I probably won't get restimulated. Postulate that I won't. But if I do, it doesn't matter. And I'm going to go ahead and run the preclear. You'll find out then that you won't be hauling out of this session halfway through. Saying, oh, I can't go on. I've got such a terrible headache. My teeth are all hurting. And that's something that just hit me in the stomach. I just can't go on running this preclear. So you want to take care of that one. And if halfway through the session you find for some specious reason, you somehow or other realize this is specious, that you want to quit this session, although the time isn't up, you want to knock off and go someplace else, and you suddenly remembered an appointment somewhere or other, you grab yourself by the nape of the neck, you can, you know, and you say to yourself, now let's see, why do I want to end this session? And you find out they just hit something that was probably very hot. In you. And so you just grit your teeth and carry on. You see, you can. There isn't any reason you have to either go down tone scale or be restimulated or anything else if you don't want to be. The liabilities of your auditing of the preclear is something that you should assess for every preclear you run. And you ought to kind of look it over before each session you run in the preclear. Just see if this is all right now. We're all clear and we're going to run fine. That's fine. If you want to be super cautious before you've had facsimile run on yourself completely out, why you do this. And you'll find that your auditing is much better. For instance, one day, I seldom was anywhere near the old foundation, any one of the old foundations, almost never inside their doors after the month of July, 1950. And ran into an auditor, a staff auditor in the hall. And I said, how are you getting along? I understand somebody told me over the phone that you're we're running a psychotic. How are you getting along? Well, it's all right. Fine. Goodness. I turned around to somebody and I said, how's the psychotic? Well, her husband took her home yesterday. Well, she was only here 2 days. Well, they had to. Psychotic went in hysterics and wouldn't stay around. Husband took her home and couldn't do anything for her. Dynex and help her, what they were practicing then. So, what gives, I think? Well, she just was such a terrible psychotic that there just was no possible hope for doing anything about her at all. And so I couldn't do anything for her, so the humane thing to do was to permit her to be taken home. And I said, when did you have anything to do with psychotics? And this auditor kind of gulped and said, well, I was a psychiatric aide in Brooklyn medical terminal spin bin or some such name. And I said, oh, you were? I said, did you ever have any experience with a psychotic who reminded you of this woman? And this girl had been standing there, this auditor, she'd been shaking. She was usually a very good auditor. She was just shaking all over up to this point. And all of a sudden said, oh, yes. She hadn't had an experience. She'd had a cataclysm. This auditor had been attacked by the almost exact facial and physical duplicate of the preclear that had come in. Had been attacked, clawed, had one eye almost pulled out, had her hair pulled out by handfuls, and nobody had come to her rescue. And she just buried the whole incident and let this poor psychotic be taken home, 400 or 500 miles away, by omitting step one. When she went into the incident with a psychotic, when she started to work with a psychotic, she had no restimulation, no inkling of the fact there'd be anything wrong. But before she had been working with her for 5 minutes, there was something wrong. Instead of stopping the session at that moment and saying to myself, somehow or other, this person restimulates me. There is some reason why I can't make this person well. And going outside and getting a cup of coffee and let the preclear sit there on the couch and contemplate the sins of the world or something of the sort. This auditor goes on plowing along, plows the preclear into more somatics, more somatics. What's this auditor trying to do to this preclear? She's trying to cripple the preclear so the preclear can't attack her. And being an auditor and working with faster than light, with how do you cripple a preclear? Well, you turn on enough somatics and leave enough of them turned on so the preclear is completely crippled up and can't strike you and claw your eyes out and pull your hair out. And she recognized even the computation the second that she got this one. You see what this could mean to him. You can call this clearing for the session. And if you clear, just by recall,
the session,
for the session, you'll find out that you will spend much less time in the session. If you went and sat down in a corner facing the wall and said the alphabet backwards a couple of times and went through several rituals, and it took you 2 hours before every session to find out and scan and work with and get out of the road of every reason why you didn't want this preclear to be well, you would save time on 3-hour sessions. If you spent 2 of those 3 hours figuring out why you didn't want this preclear well. Because facsimile one says you don't want anybody well. Mm-hmm. People are dangerous. People had better be controlled. And it will form locks right up into near present time. An auditor, after he's audited preclears for a while,
gets it.
Gets when he's not had his early incidents run, gets into a state whereby he is strong enough to carry on forward and try and try and try. And he thinks he's fighting preclears, and he's not fighting preclears at all. He's fighting the sum total of all the times he didn't clean up preclears before he audited them on himself. And he just gets to a point finally where he feels like he's wading through glue, and preclears stop running for him because he's elected them as counter-efforts. He's elected them as individuals as counter-efforts. He's elected their aberrations as counter-efforts. He's elected everything as counter-efforts. And then he elects himself as a counter-effort against himself. Why not just throw a bomb at the preclear and let it go at that? There's nothing very mystical or metaphysical about this. It's very factual because it will show in your voice tone. It will show in your general attitude toward the preclear, no matter how much you try to suppress it. Since I had a preclear once that I just thought of orneriness, I suppose. I detested it. To this day, I've never wiped up this preclear in the bank. I detested him, so I continue to elect him as counter-effort. He came over, and after the most terrific agitation, invalidation, screaming, arguing, reneging, and so on, consented to each session, each time. He would spend 2 or 3 hours of every time you audited him, out of maybe 4 or 5 hours, arguing with him about pointless things, about this and that. And he was so insidiously clever that he could get through the armor somehow or other. And he'd mutter things under his breath. Instead of running engrams, he'd say, "Oh, you insidious fool, you certainly accomplish. What did you say?" You'd say to him, "I didn't say anything," he'd say. Completely reversing your reality on everything and so on. And then he would suddenly start to brag about having done the most gruesomely detestable things. Ooh. Oh, you know, like sadistic rape of little children and so on. And be so proud of it. Happy about the life. Well, you can drive him up the tone scale or drive him down. After my 4th session with him, I'll tell you, he was polite after that. He was polite to everybody. A long while later, another auditor got a hold of this preclear and started bringing the preclear up the line and got him back up the tone scale to where he was his old self again. And learned all about...
Learned all about...
How he was a case failure, as far as I was concerned. Of course, the preclear got about 4 or 5 sessions after that and got driven back down the tone scale again. Now, that's one of the reasons I invented the handbook for preclears. Now, you'll be very, very cognizant of this fact. Every once in a while, you're going to get a hold of somebody that you just would rather drown. You would just rather burn them alive, inch by inch, than even touch them. You might not find out why if you haven't got basic facsimiles run out. You're crowding through this and working anyhow without having had a complete clear of your own bank. You'll run into this once in a while. And you'll search in vain. Is he like Grandpa? Is he like Grandma? No, I like Grandpa and Grandma. Is it like that hired man? No, it wasn't the stable boy that beat the horse. Who was it? You find out it was somebody in the year 1035 A.D. or something like that that burned a nun who was a friend of yours or something. So, I mean, it'll be something very deep, buried and involved and long lost. By the way, you can put yourself on a psychometer and ask yourself, is there any reason why I don't want to audit this preclear? And if there is, it'll go bop. And you'll say, is it in this life? No answer. Earlier life? How early? 10 lives ago? 20 lives? 2,000 years ago? Thousands of years ago? Tens of thousands of years ago? Bop! You find out this preclear looks something like a monkey. And you suddenly get this little somatic of a monkey eating your nose off while you lie dying or something. Oh, anything. It doesn't matter. But you could actually find it on the machine. But once in a while, you might not have a machine handy, and you'd just rather kill this preclear. Or once in a while, the preclear himself is a walking, living, overt act. At that moment, and this is not the sole reason for that, very far from it, but at that moment, when you recognize that the situation is going to be very rough and so forth, you get somebody in his environment who detests this person or wants to force this person, control this person, explain to them how this handbook will make it possible to do so invariably, and then make them responsible for making sure the preclear works the handbook, and that the preclear will come back to you much less detestable and easier to run. Something which, one use of the handbook. But the attack on the preclear must include the fact that some preclears, even to the most saintly of us, just plain don't deserve to get a bit better.
You'll find that many preclears
will use the most obviously reasonable but completely specious reasons as to why you aren't doing a good job. They will find reasons why you aren't doing a good job. They will find reasons to drop curves on you. you can fully expect a preclear, fully expect a preclear, to be enormously benefited by a single session and suddenly drop a curve on you to an extent that if you weren't on guard about this sort of thing, would rather leave you gasping, because there you sit all proud of having made this preclear better. Then the preclear says, well, I've seen better auditing in a slaughterhouse or something. What you've done, if you are taken aback by this, is fail to estimate where you have brought the preclear to on the tone scale. Because you quite often are auditing somebody well below 2, well below 1, quite often, without really realizing it, until you see them start coming up through the bands. Wham, up they'll come. They'll come up to covert hostility. Covert hostility, remember, is a better and higher tone than grief, regardless of how simple it seems to be to get along with a person who is in grief or in apathy. You pick up their hand and you put it there, and they stay there. And you say you're supposed to say something now, and they say something. You're their self-determinism in this case. But as you bring this person up the line, they get up to 1-1 or 1-5, and they'll drop a horrendous curve on you, maybe very overtly and maybe very covertly. They may say suddenly, you're getting along just fine with this preclear, this little girl, she's so pathetic and she seems so sweet and everything, and you were helping her out so much, and suddenly she says, I probably shouldn't tell you this, but you remember the preclear you audited last week. You know, the one that you helped so much. Well, I think her family put her in an insane asylum yesterday. Zoom! Builds you up. You're getting proud, you see, of the fact you've done something, and then zoom! Drop the curve on you quick. Or just suddenly crowd you with anger. You see, if you retaliate in tone, you will push them back down to where you didn't want them in the first place and undo your own work. Now, remember, you're being agreeable with this preclear, you're in affinity with this preclear, and so forth, and so you can be taken very much by surprise by it. Because your tone, you're estimating, their tone is apathy, so in being agreeable with them, you are actually, to some slight degree, putting yourself in apathy. And you've brought them up the tone scale, and they suddenly hammer apathy with anger. And so it comes down on you rather heavily sometimes, if you don't understand this clearly. Now, if you get a preclear up over 2, you're sailing. Of course, you have to be prepared for the 2-5 band. The 2-5 band says, well, I'm getting along fine anyhow. There isn't much use to it. I don't know why we're putting in all this work. I guess it's all run out anyhow right now. It's all done. As much as can be done. There's much use in going on. I haven't, there isn't much to live for anyway, but if you don't care, it doesn't matter. Of course, that's a sort of a mixture of, it sounds like apathy to you. It sounds like they're back down at the bottom. They're not. They're just hitting 2-5. Then they'll start in on this level. Well, there's, it's fine. It's run out. Oh, I'm so sick of running this. Why do I have to go through it again? I'm run out. I'm tired of it. They're 2-5. And just a hair above. Now, the next time you run the incident through on them, they're liable to be up, or the next time you see them in the session, they're liable to be up a little bit more than that, so that they are being flippant and are apparently really up there high, you know. They're talking about mother, and they're saying, well, the old lady does so-and-so, and then, of course, after she soaks my head in a barrel of boiling tar, then we go on with the rest of the accident, and so forth, and that's all there is to the incident. You're supposed to say ha 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 and let it go because there can't be any more to it. Oh, no. You see, the incident you were running was this individual getting burned or something, and Mama dropped the grease on it and it felt hot or something. They have made a remark which indicates there is still content to the incident. Now, how you get that without really crowding them and saying, look, you're still talking out of your aberrations. You don't want to tell pre-clears that. They're practically doing nothing else but talking out of their aberrations when you first get a hold of them. But that's the point. You don't want to validate this. Well, let's run it again just to make sure. And then they'll run this incident, which suggested actually getting their head boiled in tar or something. They meant this to be very flippant. When they come up to a complete release on the incident, it is funny. It's funny. They'll laugh about it. They're liable to laugh about it far beyond anything you ever expected to be laughed.
That is sometimes very discouraging to an auditor.
When he can't stop a preclear from laughing, because it will sound to the preclear's family like he's suddenly gone into hysterical mania of some sort and has gone completely insane because he can't stop laughing, and the laughter seems to be rather strained to them and forced because it's awfully loud and he never laughed before. This preclear is practically blowing his whole life, and he's blowing it at umpteen decibels. That is a line charge. I have seen preclears go on a line charge for days and days and days. Longest line charge I think I've seen offhand is about 7 days. Once in a while, the old foundation used to get somebody up 4 or 5 hours, sometimes 10 hours, sometimes 24 hours. Rarely anything beyond that. It's very beneficial. If you can get a preclear started on a line charge, you show him any word, any phrase, and he will promptly start to go out on another blast of laughter. What he's doing is blowing the whole chain of associations. If you start feeding him things that are very sad, he will laugh even harder. So you say, well, now look, take this seriously. Let's be serious. Reverse vector on him. See, he's laughing. You're trying to get him to be serious. And the more you try to get him to be serious, the harder he'll laugh, by the way. And you say, all right, now let's remember something sad. Let's remember the time your mother almost died. Oh, yeah. And then off into another roaring spin of laughter. What's he laughing about? Well, he's laughing off sudden relief from the recognition of the fact his mother didn't die. He'll express it in some other way. You keep a preclear rolling on this. Now, another thing that will happen to an auditor is you get a preclear halfway through an incident, and the preclear starts to scream. Now, preclears can scream.
Don't
disabuse yourself of the idea that a preclear won't scream. A preclear screams. I had a preclear one time start screaming at 2 o'clock in the morning. Came in, leaned on the door jamb, almost collapsed in my arms. Was in horrible shape, he said. And I ran him, just started to lock scan off the date. He ran right straight into the incident, which an auditor had nicked but hadn't run. This fellow was in terrible shape anyhow. He was a psychotic. But ran into the beginning of this incident and started to scream. The windows were down. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. And the complaint came from 2 blocks away. You talk about volume of sound. A human being can't make that much sound. That's all there is to it. Completely ear-shattering, nerve-shattering. What sound volume you'll run into with somebody? Sit there and cover up your ears and say, go over it again. That's kind of rough for an auditor to face, by the way, a screamer. Or a terror charge. A terror charge can be so great that it will actually make the bed chatter up and down against the floor. An anger charge can be so heavy that a preclear is liable to bang his fist right straight through a wall. Been done many times. A preclear may be so involved in the incident he's running, he's so completely unaware of his environment, he is utterly revivified in the incident that he'll start banging his head against the wall. actually maiming himself. Well, of course, what you ought to do is... Well, it's a good thing to try to interpose a pillow between himself and the wall. A preclear will roll back and forth on the bed sometime. You, as an auditor, by the way, go through terrific gyrations watching the preclear do this and do that, because you'll brace yourself, you see, to keep the preclear from rolling off the bed, and you'll reduce your own vocal cords to keep his from bursting, and you'll try to make tears come in your eyes to make him cry, and all sorts of weird things. You'll pick up his somatics so he can get rid of them. And by the way, you'll turn on your own somatics so that you can get his on. You try to turn on his somatics, and all of a sudden your own come on. His don't. And in short, you can really work at this. And when you have engrams, particularly facsimile one and so on in place yourself, why, you've just got to be prepared to go through a little more hell than you would ordinarily expect in the routine business of living. But at no time should an auditor ever back down. At no time should an auditor ever fail to finish off an incident, regardless of the mood, words, or emotion of the preclear. You realize that people low on the tone scale, below 4, have a great deal of difficulty in committing overt acts. Auditing looks like an overt act. Maybe someplace, maybe you kill some girl or a cat or something, and it screamed and you were sorry for it afterwards. The preclear starts to scream, and all of a sudden you get the idea that you're committing an overt act against the preclear. So you haul off and try to make it up to the preclear by patching him up somehow or other instead of letting him scream. You have to be willing as an auditor to butcher that preclear. Just butcher him from a standpoint of letting him scream, letting him run somatics, letting him hurt, letting him emote, and so on. It's not an overt act. It'll just be some overt act of your own against another dynamic, which you'll go into re-stim sometimes in running a preclear. Makes you appear to be in the position of an offender. The reaction of an offender is to try to regret it and make it up too. And, of course, that's sympathy, and that'll ruin your preclear. So sometimes you'll be running this incident, and the preclear will go into a terror charge and start to scream. And what do? You say, my God, there I am making him scream. I guess I'm choking him, which is what you did some earlier time to somebody. And you say, well, there ain't locks on this. Are there any locks on this? Is there any present time locks on this? And the preclear will say, yeah. You'll stop screaming. Yeah, there's a present time lock on this. What happened? Well, I saw this little girl scream. Yeah, I think mother was taking a sliver out of her finger and she was screaming. That's right. Well, begin at the beginning of this lock. Then you feel this terrific sensation of relief inside yourself. Gosh, I guess I got out of that. Yeah, you got out of it, but you left the preclear in a terror charge. You'd make people pretty sick doing this to them. Run it through, bullet through, slam it through, one way or the other. The best remedy for an auditor, of course, is to be in a frame of mind where he's willing to commit any overt act in order to get the preclear well. Any overt act to get the preclear well. Frame of mind. By the way, that frame of mind of rather even flippant determination. Well, go ahead, run it. So it'll kill you. Go ahead, run it. You say your lungs are sore from screaming? Well, now let's see. Maybe if we ran that earlier incident, why, maybe you could really blow them out of your chest. Let's run it. You'd be surprised how many times a preclear who's low on the tone scale will respond to this and come up tone scale toward your level and run it. But you have to be willing to commit an overt act.
That doesn't mean that you're actually willing to go out and get a base, that you actually will go out and get a baseball bat and hit him over the head with it.
But if you were to think that hitting him over the head with a baseball bat would run out the incident and make him, well, hit him over the head with a baseball bat. I mean, that's got to be your mood. We're going to make this person well. Wham! The only thing that's making him sick is aberration. He wants to be well. I want him to be well. So what? Let's roll. He's going to get well. That's all there is to that. Surety, consideration. You take a business which is managed by an individual who is afraid to hurt people. That business is going to fail. The employees are going to be unhappy, and there's going to be a lot of people hurt. Lots of people are going to get hurt by somebody who is afraid to hurt people. Now, the point I'm making is that you can hurt a lot of preclears by being afraid to hurt them. Because the only way you can hurt a preclear is to keep him from running incidents. And if you can restrain him enough from running incidents, if you can keep him from running that grief, if you can keep him from running off that terror, if you can keep him from going through these convulsions, why, you're all set. You've made him sick for keeps. Not that another auditor couldn't undo it, but you're liable to spoil his accessibility. And some other auditor's liable to have to pick this preclear way up from the bottom. Why? Because you didn't want to hurt him. So you sympathized with him. That could be very serious. The auditor's code, as contained in the book Science of Survival, is a very, very good thing to know. There are two particular things that you must not do. You must not invalidate the preclear's data. You mustn't tell him, oh, that's dub-in. Let's run something real. Oh, you know better to run that. Let's run something else. How do you know it isn't real? You're not inside his head. You haven't lived his life. Of course, if he runs 18 train wrecks that all happened in the same year, and you know that he's been living in the country and there were no trains, you can assume that what he is running has some slight questionability. But don't be sure of it to the extent where you invalidate him. Now get him off the subject of train wrecks, that's all. Just get him off the subject of train wrecks. Don't invalidate his data, that's all. He will suffer every time his data is invalidated. Now you run this incident out of the preclear, you run this incident where he just is bound and determined to run this time that the car ran over him when he was 4 years old. Father backed out of the garage and ran over him with the car, and he just determined to run this incident. He's not going to hear of anything else, but he's got to run this incident. You see, this was a time when Father did something to him, and he wants to show you that he is justified in doing what he did to Father, or to fathers in general. So he wants to run this incident. We'll let him run the incident. Don't cause a big roar about it. After all, probably a wheel passed over his leg and it was amputated. Something mild. Not like these big early incidents that really fixed him up theta-wise. I'm being facetious when I say run over his leg. That probably would be a slightly serious incident. Because he'd be without his leg, and this would be a restimulator of it. And his chances of growing a leg in his present aberrated state are zero. Now, I'm not saying that he could grow a leg if he were in any other kind of a state. I'm not saying he couldn't either. Anyway, he wants to run this incident. So you start him through the incident, and you let him run the incident. And he runs it out, and finally it gets up to very clear reality, and he's in beautiful shape about this incident. He likes this incident. He thinks this incident is fine. And he goes home, and he talks to his mother on the telephone, who lives in Sioux Falls, and happens to be at 1.2 on the tone scale. And he says, you know, the time that Dad ran over me, you know, you had a coat that was a green coat with purple spots and so forth. I got all his data back there before, and I got to look inside the house. And all those pictures you had of angels. His mother says, you know, I didn't have any pictures of angels then. They were acquired when you were 8. And he said, yeah, but I ran this incident, and this old Maxwell car was going bop, bop, crunch, bop, bop, crunch. Your father didn't buy a Maxwell car until 1921. He completely overlooks the fact that Maxwell cars were not made in 1921. They were discontinued earlier, I think. I think the car by that time had become the Hat in the Ring car or the Rickenbacker or something. I've forgotten exactly what it was, but so has Mama. And boy, has she forgotten. She's much older than your preclear. And she was not hurt during that sequence to amount to anything, and her data on it is not particularly reliable. But She may not like the preclear to know. Something in her tells her that it's dangerous for this boy to know all this stuff. So she'll just automatically start slapping him back on everything he said. But the car came out of the garage and ran over me. And we had Dr. Watson, and she said, well, look, there was a car that did run over you, dear, but it didn't go all the way over you. And your father was very sorry about it, and that happened when you were 9. And your father's very sorry about it, and as a matter of fact, we made it up to you. We bought you a new bicycle because of it. And the car didn't run over you, but you were so frightened, you merely thought it did. And we didn't commit any overt act against you. We didn't commit any overt act against you. We didn't do this. We didn't do this. We didn't do this. This is all she's saying. Get off the subject, she says. Get off. Let's talk about something else. I mean, he comes back to you and you try to run him and you find out the Sonic he had's gone. The Vizio he had is gone. His recalls now cease at the age of 16. He can't remember anything earlier. Great. But the invalidation of a past life. If you run effort processing indiscriminately on a preclear, you're going to run him into a past life. I don't care who he is. He's the most materialistic science on the face of the earth today. By giving him about 3 ordinary, simple, routine efforts to run, I would wind him up in a past life. There he would be in the crowd watching Benjamin Franklin fly the kite or something. And he'd say, gee, I guess imagining a lot of this and so forth. And you say, well, now let's move back to the time you fall off the horse, just assuming that he probably fell off a horse in that life, horses being what they are. So he goes, all of a sudden he says, oh, you know, I've got a terrible headache. And we say, well, let's run the incident and fall off the horse. So he falls off the horse and we find out that it's Derby Day at Boston or something. And his name was Armin. And his folks lived at 322 Back Bay, and he's got all the dope, and it's getting realer and realer and realer. It tells him something very interesting. It tells him suddenly, I haven't lived just one life. The greatest horrible trick that you could pull on any individual would convince him that he goes through all of this just once and he never has another chance. That he's born into the world and then he dies. And after he's dead forever. He'll never have it again. Anything he loses then is terribly important to him. Anything which he fails in will be most horribly regretted. You can keep an individual down at the bottom of the tone scale by proving to him that he only takes one crack at it, that he has no survival as a personal identity of any kind whatsoever. I'm talking to you to demonstrable phenomenon. I'm talking to you about this because it's very, very important that you establish to your own great satisfaction the existence of previous existences before you demonstrate to anyone that you don't want them to exist by telling others they don't want to exist. In other words, let's not further the control mechanism because there is no single proof of any kind at all that an individual lives only once. There's no proof. And there is ample, adequate phenomena and proof that an individual lives on and on and on and on. We have phenomena, we have proof, it shows up on any lie detector, any policeman operating any lie detector on any criminal could have asked him this question, have you ever lived before? And the lie detector will say, bop, yes. This phenomena has been lying there right on the surface. It's something that people won't look at because they've been taught otherwise. So, the individual runs this past death. He runs this past life. All of a sudden, he recognizes something like a bolt of lightning. His recalls are suddenly repaired all up and down the track, and he suddenly says, you know, I've lived a lot of times. Gee, that means to him he'll live again. That means to him he'll have another chance. It's like taking a condemned man out of a cell and saying, there's sunlight. And he runs into some snide character around someplace that said, I ain't nobody ever lived before, and everybody knows. That's the best explanation. You see, everybody knows nobody ever lived before. And besides, you're talking about the Roman Empire, and I'll have you know that the Roman Empire failed in the year 221 and after that was run exclusively by the Phoenicians. And besides that, that society was superseded by the Egyptians. And that's where Masonry came from. And so on. It doesn't matter how crazy the reasoning is. The fact that somebody is hammering and pounding at this individual and telling him, you didn't, you didn't, you didn't. They're not saying that past life doesn't exist. They're saying to him, you belong in a deep, dark cell where you'll never see any sunlight again. You'll never have another chance. And what they're saying to him is not just telling him he's a liar, that he's wrong. They're saying to him, you're dead when you're dead, and you're going to be dead forever. And every little input of action that you're making into this society is lost. There is no use for it. You're not preparing anything for your own future. Go on back in that dungeon and close that door and live in the dark, fella. That's what they're telling them. And the pre-clear's tone will dive on an invalidation of a past life like a rocket plane. Oh, wham! There's only one thing you should do, then, in regard to these things. Run them up to such a high level of reality that they can't be invalidated. You be very careful about invalidating pre-clears when they start to run something odd, peculiar, and strange. There was a poor kid back in Elizabeth that all the staff was having a lot of fun with. And do you know what he was running? He was running a past life on Mars. And do you know that, of course, is impossible? Except for one thing. In very sane pre-clears lately, I've been hitting a life on Mars. And they almost spun this kid in. He had a good chance of going right out and coming right back to battery and being in good shape. And they butchered him with this invalidation. What data were they operating from? No data except the desire to be vicious. Of course, facsimile one tells you that you only live once. You're not supposed to know. And the other one that's very important is don't evaluate your pre-clear's data for him. You're there to make him think, not to do his thinking for him. And although it's very sweet of you to say, well, oh, you remember the incident you ran the other day, and he said, well, yes, and you say, you know, the one you ran with the car and getting run over when you were 4 years of age, and remember the angels and so forth. And he said, yeah, well, I wasn't thinking that. Well, you say, you know, you thought it was very real. Data, 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 data. Feed him. And watch him go down the tone scale. What you're doing is the same trick a lot of people have done to him. Is you're saying, you can't think or evaluate for yourself. I have to think and evaluate and remember for you. You go into a family where the husband, for instance, isn't doing well. You'll very often find his wife anxiously answering all the questions you put to the husband. Anxiously doing so, even though you're only talking socially with a husband. You say, well, I bet it was something like that in 1918. And he says, well, as a matter of fact, and she said, well, as a matter of fact, it was pretty bad. Wasn't it, dear? All of his opinions, she's feeding in opinions before he can express one. And this fellow will be in bad shape. You, as an auditor, can push the pre-clear down the tone scale by telling the pre-clear what to think about what. You don't care what he thinks about it. And the easiest way not to evaluate for him is not to care what he evaluates. Because if you're doing your job, he'll evaluate automatically. And your job is to put him into a situation where he can evaluate. Not to evaluate for him. The two ways that you can ruin a pre-clear is to evaluate for him and, on the other hand, invalidate him. And the only thing which you can do wrong as an action is to be a coward and fail to let him run on through the incident. Because you're scared. Those three things, then, in the attack on the pre-clear, assume enormous importance. And you should pay very great attention to the auditor's code in general. Thank you very much.